Hello, hockey fans. Welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast, Saturday afternoon edition. We've got a great show today. Andrew Gross from the New York Newsday is going to join us in segment two to look at the Islanders and how they're doing this year. Probably one of the most surprising teams in the National Hockey League. After that, Lyle Spector, the owner-operator of Spector's Hockey. Did I say Lyle Spector? Lyle Richardson is going to be here. We're going to break down all the latest rumors. We're going to go over the Muzzin trade with him a little bit. And then the Florida-Pittsburgh trade. So the trade winds are blowing, and Lyle Richardson will be in to break it all down for us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, hockey fans, thank you for joining us here on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa, as always, out on Long Island, getting through the tail end of the bitter week that was from the Midwest on out to the East. Chris, how are you out there?
It's still a little, we're getting there. I think tomorrow we'll take a nice jump up.
Well, it's not every day you
there,
learn.
But it was...
I learned this week that the Celsius and the Fahrenheit temperature gradient converges at negative 40. There's one point on the temperature scale that when they're both the same temperature and they find that center at negative 40. And they were talking about Minneapolis, where the temperature was the same as centigrade and Fahrenheit. So I hope everybody's been safe. I hope everybody's been able to stay inside, light the fires and the wood-burning stoves and crank up the heat. And stay safe. I hope everybody that listens to the show and everybody else had a safe week, no matter what the weather was in their region. So we've got a good show today for everybody. Chris was able to snag Andrew Gross from the New York Newsday. He's the beat writer for the Islanders for that publication. Follow him on Twitter at @AGrossNewsday. So that's going to be a fun conversation. We're going to get into the New York Islanders with him. And then Lyle Richardson from Spector's Hockey. There's been some trades already. It's the deadline's almost 4 weeks away, but yet the trade winds are already blowing. Teams that think that they need to add that piece right now, they're not waiting to pull the trigger on their deals. So we're going to have a good conversation with Richardson. But let's start now. The All-Star break is over. Golden Knights coming off a 9-day break. We're in Carolina last night. They lost 5-2. Following up today in Florida, I imagine Fleury will get the start. Legacy was in net last night, along with a couple other roster moves. Hecoff was in. Lindberg was out. Legacy was in. Fleury was out. Theodore was the bright spot with 2 goals for the Golden Knights. But now this going back before the break, they've lost 3 of 4. I voiced a little bit of concern, Chris, that after that 7-game win streak against really, you know, lower tier competition, that the next set of games was going to let me know what I think of this team. And so far they're not passing my test as being the upper echelon of teams. I think people might have been jumping the gun a little bit during that winning streak, but they've come back against different competition and haven't been able to get the job done, Chris.
Yeah, well, it's kind of tricky, right? Not just for them, but for everybody. You know, I mean, it's great for the players to rest up off the All-Star break leading into it and afterwards. But coming out of the break is going to be a tricky situation for teams. It was the same for Carolina, so I totally get that. And Carolina is a pretty good team. I mean, So not an easy first game. Obviously, a disappointing outcome. Big game tonight in Florida. I know it's back-to-back, but I think Florida played last night as well. And then they got Tampa early next week. So, you know, ideally like to get 2 points tonight because don't want to go into Tampa down on this road trip starting out 0-2. And instead of hopefully having a real strong road trip that we were predicting on last week or hoping for last week, wind up looking at an ugly road trip. So
yeah.
I think, you know, they're fortunate. We talked about it before. They're in because the rest of the division isn't great. They have a bit of a cushion. But in terms of big picture, of winning the division like last year, each day goes by, that's looking less and less likely.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, the Golden Knights played a good game, but Carolina just competes so hard every time they play the game. You know, win or lose, those guys, that's a scrappy group of players. They were outshot 32-25. They held the edge in the faceoff 60-40. Most of the stats, hits, blocks, giveaways, and takeaways go to the Knights. They were just – and really Mrazek made quite a few point blank saves on really good, grade-A opportunities. Riley Smith on a tip. Stastny and Pacioretty both had good chances. Alex Tuch had a lot of good chances in the game. So, the Knights were in the game. They weren't the 5-2 score was a 200-foot empty netter. Justin Falk scored to end the game. But they had tied the game in the second period but gave up that third goal to Carolina, 18:23 of the second. So they went into the intermission down 3-2, and then Aho really put it 4-2 early in the third, and the Knights were chasing it the rest of the way. I think tonight, I'm not sure, after the Florida-Pittsburgh somewhat junior blockbuster that went down yesterday, I'm assuming that the Panthers are going to have Sheehan and Brassard in the lineup tonight. Trying to look it up right now. Sorry about that. I'm assuming they're going to have a full complement of players, so we'll see if the Knights can bounce back. Here's the interesting tidbit. The only time the Knights have ever lost four games in a row was in the Stanley Cup final, and they are now on a three-game losing streak. So in order to keep that sort of oddball stat alive, they need to get a win tonight, or the no four-game losing streak in the regular season is going to go by the boards. I think it'll be a good test. I think, you know, Florida's got a lot of talent. They always have. We kind of wonder what it's going to take for that group to put it all together and compete for the playoff spot that their talent says they should be competitive for. So I think it'll be a good test for the Knights. I think they need to get this win. Like you said, Tampa's coming up later in the week. Their longest road trip left on the season is right now. So if they can get to Florida and get 2 points in Detroit after Tampa, 500 road trip and come home for a long stretch at home, they'll have 8 out of their next 9 will be in T-Mobile. So you look for them to hopefully 500 on this road trip, go home and right the ship, and then we'll take the rest of the season as it bears out, sir.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what's interesting to me too is with we'll get into the Jake Muzzin trade when Lyle comes on. But you know, what's the impact from that from a Vegas standpoint? From you know, some of these, not all trades are the same, and not every player's situation is the same. Because so, for instance, Jake Muzzin is signed through next year, so he's not a rental, as an example,
right,
in terms of the rest of just this year. But you know, the market is going to start setting prices. And if you're George McPhee and say, I would love to add a Jake Muzzin type player, be it forward or defenseman, that level player, do I have the appetite to pay what the Toronto Maple Leafs just paid? So that's something it would be interesting to talk to Lyle about in terms of the Knights and the cost of doing business and where they fall regarding that.
Well, what do you what do you make of the Pittsburgh-Florida trade? Pittsburgh brings in two former first-round picks, and it costs them two roster players, a first and two fourths to make that trade. What do you think that does to the market?
It sounds like Brassard is going to be flipped in the short term, and it seems
really
to me that Florida's plan is they want Duke said, who isn't having a great year, but I think he's a good player. They wanted to clear out his cap space number moving forward, maybe looking at towards the offseason, and collect some draft picks in the process. So this was kind of step one to that, and I think Broussard will be I don't know what they're going to do with Riley Sheehan, if he'll stay or if he'll go, but you know, who knows? Maybe they'll move both of them and pick up a bunch of draft picks, clear out about $4 million in cap space, and maybe try to be, you know, beat players come the off season if it's a Panarin or if it's a Bobrovsky or.
Yeah, well, they I think they cleared what, almost six with Bukestad and McCann leaving. So if they do flip Broussard, and I like Riley Sheehan, I like him as a player. If you lose those two also, and you said what, close to $10 million in cap space out of if you could move those two also, they got to be in the market. Their owner tweeted out that he was going to be an aggressive offseason based on this trade. So we'll see what that does for Florida going forward. It is going to be, you know, and I don't know how Muzzin trade impacts anything the Golden Knights would do. I think the market for players around this time of year is what somebody's willing to pay for them. You know what I mean? If somebody wants Muzzin for a first round pick and two, from what I gather, I was unsure at first, but you know, pretty well thought of prospects, then that's what the market says. If you know, if the Knights are going to target a player, it's going to, the market kind of sets itself with what someone's willing to pay. And, you know, I don't think George McPhee is going to be too aggressive right now. I think he wants to keep those. He's got three second rounders this year or three third rounders.
He's got three third rounders.
I mean, you could package one of those maybe in a deal if you're getting another, maybe a fifth back with whatever player, but I don't think he's going to want to throw too many of those picks away. He's already been pretty liberal with them in some of his other deals. And I think there's still an organizational depth issue long-term, where you need to finish stocking up the AHL with your players. So I don't know how that affects what he'll do. I don't think he'll bow to that myself.
Yeah, I think he'll be smart, and like I said, a good friend Russ Cohen, I saw him on the Hockey Buzz weekly daily web show.
Right.
And he felt that the Kings did well in this deal. He thought that it wasn't a cheap price. But, you know, so if you were another fellow GM and you're talking to George McPhee and saying, hey, well, look, this is the cost of doing business, look at the Muzzin trade, I would say, yeah, but wait, hold on a second. Muzzin has a terrific cap number, and the player you're trading may, you know, has an okay cap number. You know, so, you know, if you're going to try to compare apples to apples, they better be apples to apples, not oranges.
Yeah.
So, like I said, everything is very, has its uniqueness to it, you know. So, but, you know, having said that, you know, everyone wants to get the best deal that they can, and it will be very competitive market. Because there's a lot of teams who think they can have a special spring, early summer.
Yeah, there's, I mean, pretty much five teams in the West, right? And
yeah, I would say so.
I think there's a greater depth of teams that can go on a run in the East this year than in the West. I think almost anybody that gets in the East has a legitimate argument right now, except maybe the two wild card teams, but the top six. I mean, you could obviously, Tampa's going to go in as a favorite. Toronto has it at Boston. The New York Islanders, and then Pittsburgh and Washington, all three of those teams could make an argument that they have what it takes to make a deep run. So I think the East is a little bit more wide open than the West. I think the West is kind of shaking out with enough separation. Nashville, Winnipeg, Calgary, the Sharks, and Vegas. And then in the Central, you're looking down at the Dallases and the Minnesotas. Quite a bit. I don't think any of them is going to get back into it for the division. That's Winnipeg and Nashville seem to be running away with that. And I mean, same goes in the Pacific, where VGK 10 points clear of Vancouver for that third spot, and 19 points clear of Vancouver is Calgary sitting atop the division. So I think the East this year is a little bit more wide open, sir.
And I think we're destined for a Sharks Knights first round series.
Yeah, and that'll be exciting. Well, let's turn the page now to the New York Islanders. We have Andrew Gross from the New York Newsday joining us on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Andrew, thanks for joining us on the show today, sir.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys. How's everything?
Oh, everything's good. I'm out here in Vegas, so I didn't get any of that Arctic blast this week. I know you guys are starting to turn the page on it. So I hope you and yours have been safe throughout the week.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It's winter, so it's going to get cold at some point, you know.
There you go.
This is a little, I mean, we're not in Chicago, so that's good.
All right. Well, I want to start off going back into camp this year. And, you know, with the coaching change and the Tavares situation, was there anything that you noticed in camp early on that this team had the chance to overachieve from what most people thought they could do? I'm a big culture guy. Anyone who listens to the show knows that bringing in Stanley Cups and bringing in that experience, I think, does, you know, nothing but good for the team. And it can create a situation where when you get 100% buy-in and you have that championship pedigree at the helm, if you will, that it creates that 100% buy-in and a team can become greater than its parts. And the Vegas Golden Knights are a great example of that. Early on in camp last year, you could tell this was going to be a special group from the, you know, here locally. Probably went farther than most people thought, of course, but there's that bond that gets created when you do have that buy-in. Did you notice that early in camp, or is that something that's been growing throughout the year?
No, I think you started noticing it even before camp, really, when Lou Lamoriello took over. You just, you know, there was a change in the tenor of the organization. You know, when you talk to people, Lou keeps people on their toes. There was almost an instant accountability, you know, from the top guy all the way, you know, to the bottom, right through the organization. And Lou set about instilling that pretty quickly. And then, of course, he hires Barry. And I think it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights, because that's sort of the reference point that Barry has talked a lot about this season. You know, it'll basically look at what they did last year. Why not anybody else? And, you know, Barry came in and, you know, he said, you know, fixing the defense, which obviously was his number one priority after the Islanders give up the most goals in the league since 2007, you know, he thought it would be an easy fix. And I guess my only surprise was exactly how spot on he was with that. You know, I thought he would improve the best. I wouldn't have given you that the Islanders, with essentially the same six defensemen, now Thomas Hickey's hurt and, you know, rookie Devontae's is playing, you know, but basically the same six. I wouldn't have given you that they were going to be, you know, allowed the fewest goals in the NHL, you know, through this point. That's a little bit of a surprise. But, yeah, you can see the culture change right through the summer, and certainly in camp, the way Barry ran it and his assistants and the drills they were doing and how defensively focused they were, you could sense that there was a real direction finally for this organization.
And that kind of goes into what was said, and Chris can jump in and tell me which player had the comment at the All-Star game. One of the players was asked, what's different about this year's team? And his response was, everybody's treated equally. And I don't know if that was meant as a jab at the former or more of a positive statement as to way the guys feel about the Trotz administration. But that's kind of telling if someone's going to come out in the media. Hockey players notoriously close-lipped about stuff like that. But for someone to come out and just straight up say, oh, everybody's treated the same now, that's kind of a byproduct of that culture change that Trotz has been able to implement, correct?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, it goes – I mean, it goes right through the lineup, you know, where, you know, Trotz has created a system where he's rolling four lines and he trusts any one of his, you know, forward lines on the ice at any moment. He's not really matching up against opponents, and almost the same, you know, the same for his defensive pairs. You know, he's instilled the trust throughout the lineup, and he's got, you know, all 18 skaters in a game, you know, working on the same page. You know, I don't, as far as that comment, and you know, sorry about that. They just tested the horn here at the Coliseum, but
nice.
You know,
clip that sound effect.
It's not the cannon in Columbus, at least, but
right.
You know, and Lightning coach John Cooper made sort of the same observation yesterday, Friday, you know, when the Lightning came in here, asked about the Islanders. He said, well, he knows one thing. With Anders Lee as the captain and Barry Trotz as the coach, he, you know, there are no egos on this team. And, you know, some may have seen that as a dig. And I don't
right.
think either of those comments were meant to be digs at John Tavares, but the truth is that John Tavares was the face of this organization, and I think it's more on, you know, previous management and the ownership, just how much, you know, how much say John Tavares was allowed to have in organizational decisions. And John Tavares didn't go looking for that, but they went to him, you know, and said, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And, you know, after a while, it sort of does become, you know, well, this guy is on this rung, and then there's everyone else. And it had
right.
nothing to do with what John Tavares was looking to do. It's the way the organization and management treated JT. And this year under Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz, there isn't that. And, you know, and Anders Lee is the captain, and, you know, he commands respect in the league, but, you know, I don't think he commands respect in the room, certainly, but I don't think Lou Lamoriello is running to him, you know, to check every little decision made by the organization.
I would agree with that 100%. Now, let me get one more in before I pass you off to Chris. Now, Chris Lisa, he covers the Islanders for Eye on Isles FS, and he's a lot more tuned into the Islanders than I am out here on the West Coast. But being that the uptick in play, like you said, worst goals allowed, best goals allowed, the focus on structure and team as a stress point from the coaching staff and Lamoriello on down, is this level of play sustainable for the Knights, or not for the Knights, for the Islanders, of course? And is this a team that can make a run in the playoffs the way they're currently constructed?
Yeah, no, I think so, because, you know, they stick to that structure, they're going to be in, you know, more games than not, you know, and it's not like this is a crew that has no talent, and that's kind of how, you know, it comes off when we talk like this.
I right.
mean, there is some real talent on this team.
For sure.
I mean, Matthew Barzal, you saw, I mean, you know, Sidney Crosby calling him the best 3-on-3 player in the league. I mean, that's not faint praise, you know. And Anthony Beauvillier's game has been up and down, but, you know, the speed he brings is elite speed. And, you know, and you go back to Anders Lee, and, you know, I mentioned the rookie Taze. And certainly, you know, both goalies, Robin Leonard and Thomas Greiss, you know, you don't think of them, you know, maybe amongst the best goalies in the league. But the way they're playing, that's how they're playing. I mean, Greiser, you know, 41 saves, shuts out the Lightning last night. You know,
yeah,
the
phenomenal.
Lightning had never been the Lightning have the most goals in the league. They got Nikita Kucherov, and they hadn't been shut out in the season. And Greiser, you know, I mean, I can get on my soapbox and tell you how silly I think a game, you know, that special and that good is to be decided by a shootout. I mean, that's crap. But
we touched on that,
you know,
earlier. I'm fine with
know,
a tie
but,
in the league, you know.
Oh,
personally.
My God, I love
5 minutes. If it's
I
not
think,
decided, give them a point each and rock and roll. Let it go.
You know what? Ties to me were a part of the fabric of the NHL.
I agree. And I
think the league lost something when they did away with them, because, in a way, I feel like the league kind of dumbed it down. You know, they felt like, you know, they were panicking that fans would go away if you couldn't get a winner, you know. And
nope.
I guess maybe there's something to be said for that, because I know shootouts are popular, or at least they were when they started with a large portion of the fan base. But I think there are some true blood hockey fans out there who kind of see it for what it is.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let me pass you off to Chris. I know he wants to jump into the conversation. Chris?
Hey, Andrew. Great to talk to you. So I got two questions for you. So let's start with the current roster. Where do things stand regarding Lou, who obviously is very tight-lipped, but in terms of, you know, the Islanders have four prominent unrestricted free agents at the end of the year, although no one seems to be panicking about it. Is a lot different from this time last year, right? In terms of Anders Lee, Brock Nelson, Robin Leonard, and Jordan Eberle. I mean, me personally, I would be pretty close to being shocked if Lee doesn't get done. And I feel like Eberle, they probably want to upgrade on him and maybe get a little bit younger. Nelson and Leonard, I don't have a great feel of what their plans for them are long term, but where do you stand in terms of those four players and their long term future?
I think you're pretty spot on with where you are with Anders Lee. I mean, every indication is, you know, I mean, Anders, you know, I know every free agent, and John Tavares said he wanted to be here too, but you know, every indication from Anders' side is that, you know, that this is home for him, and this, you know, this is something special. And I think when the Islanders handed him the captaincy, there was that, you know, kind of anticipation that they wouldn't have done that if he didn't figure into their long-term plans. Now, I mean, he's certainly not going to come cheaply. You know, I think you're starting around $6 million a year for him, if not more. But, you know, I agree. I think he gets done. I can tell you, you know, Brock Nelson was, you know, he's been a little bit up and down lately, not as consistent as he was earlier this season. But Barry Trotz identified him, you know, quickly in training camp as the guy who he wanted on what you would call the Islanders' top line with Anders Lee and Jordan Eberle. And it's kind of weird that the whole top line are impending UFAs. That's kind of a, you know, somewhat of a unique situation. But you know what? I mean, Brock Nelson has pretty much been, you know, kind of a more of a bottom six. You know, even though where he was drafted, the hope or the anticipation was he would wind up being more of a top six type of center. And Barry Trotz has given him that role this year. And for the most part, he's filled that well. I think the organization likes Brock Nelson. You know, I could see him, you know, maybe getting a 3-4 year deal offer from the Islanders here, probably at around, you know, what he's making right now, which is, you know, was it 4.25, you know, so maybe he goes up to 4.5, 4.75 over the length of that deal. And then it's just up to him, you know, whether, you know, that's acceptable or he wants to test free agency. But, you know, I would be shocked if they traded Nelson, you know, by February 25th, deal or not. And the same goes for Lee. Jordan Eberle, it wouldn't shock me to see them hold on to him and then let him walk at the end of the year. Because, you know, I sort of agree that they might look, you know, elsewhere for that scoring wing option. But, you know, or they could trade him depending on, you know, what Lou's Lou is going to upgrade. I will say that in terms of if he trades Eberle, it's because he believes he's improving his team. He's not going to, I don't think, trade Eberle for like future assets at this point, because I think Lou is looking at a team that, you know, is headed towards the playoffs. And when that's been the case in Lou's past, Lou has been aggressive in trying to improve the team for that playoff run, not, you know, kind of give away assets and maybe weaken the team going into the playoffs. And in terms of Leonard, you know, he comes here, obviously his personal demons have been well documented this season. comes here on a make good 1 year, $1.5 million deal. To this point, he has certainly made good. I know, you know, he's kind of found a home here, and coming off, you know, battling addiction and, you know, the mental health issues, I think it's very important for Robin to be in a safe, comfortable spot, and that's how he feels here with the Islanders. So I sort of expect both sides there to work out a deal, whether, you know, it's here during the season or after the season. But I certainly think that, you know, there's a 3 to 4 year deal to be made there.
Well, all right,
question,
Mr. Gross.
Our next guest is on
the line, Chris.
Just give me one last
real quick
question for Andrew here. So, Andrew, real quick, how aggressive do you think Lou will be at the deadline, and you think his number one priority is to add a little scoring?
Yeah, I think Lou is always aggressive. You know, I mean, that's been the way he's operated going back to, you know, 87 with the Devils. He's an aggressive general manager and president. I do think they want to bolster the scoring a little bit. And I think, you know, I mean, if Lou gets a chance to bring in a top four defenseman, he would do it. But those come at a high price. So, you know, I don't know whether that kind of deal would be doable. I think it's more likely he'd be able to bring in some forward help.
All right, Andrew, thank you so much for joining us on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Everybody can follow him at A Gross Newsday. He's the B writer for the Islanders for the New York Newsday. Thank you so much for coming in. Hopefully we'll talk to you down the road closer to the playoffs. If the Islanders look like they're going to get in and make a run, we'd love to have you back on the show, sir.
That sounds great, guys. Thanks for having me. You have a good one.
All right,
you too, Andrew.
Now. All right, we're going to run right into our next guest. Lyle Richardson has been on the show a few times already, is back in. We're getting closer to the trade deadline. And it's time to bring Spectre's Hockey Perspective back into the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Lyle, thanks a lot for coming back in, buddy.
Always a pleasure, guys. How's things today?
Things are good. Things are good. I wanted to jump in and look back at the week. We had a couple good trades. Toronto picks up Muzzin, and then yesterday the Florida-Pittsburgh trade. Let me get your thoughts on both of those trades before we start looking forward at some of the buying and selling that's about to start happening.
Sure. Well, I mean, we'll start off with the Leafs deal for Muzzin. You know, I think he's a very good addition to Toronto's blue line. I mean, excuse me. I mean, he's got considerable experience, of course. By most accounts, he's having a career year. He's one of the few bright spots on an otherwise miserable season for the LA Kings this year. And with his experience, as I said, I mean, he won a Stanley Cup with them in 2014, so he's a good addition there. The only concern that I have, though, is that they didn't really address their need for a top four right side, right shot defenseman. Muzzin plays solely on the left-hand side, and he's a left-hand shot. Now it looks like they've decided to address this by moving Morgan Rielly over to the right side. We'll see how that goes over the next 2 to 3 weeks. That's what they did last night when they were playing against the Wings and left Muzzin on the paired up with him on the left side.
Right.
You know, we'll see how that goes. But you know,
Rielly's having a great year. I don't like to see too much moving around on a player like that who's really having a phenomenal season himself.
Oh, absolutely. And as I said, right now I think that this making the trade when they did gives them not only a bit of time to allow Muzzin to get used to his new team, but also gives management a chance to assess the defense and see if they still need to go out and get another right side guy. If they do, I don't think it'll be somebody comparable to Muzzin, because I really don't think there's anybody available that's affordable for them to get. I mean, there are guys who could be available, somebody like a Dougie Hamilton or a Justin Falk or Brett Pesce, just three from the Hurricanes right off the top. But the asking price for those guys will be a roster player, and that's something I don't think the Leafs want to give up. They got Muzzin without having to give up anybody off the roster. So maybe they look more for a depth guy on the right side, maybe somebody like the Flyers, Radko Gudas, maybe somebody like the Rangers, Adam McQuaid, perhaps. You know, somebody in there who could be a depth guy on the right side. We'll see how that works out for them.
The one thing I like about that pairing, Muzzin's led the league in Corsi for, I think, two years out of the last four. So then, you know, if Riley can get comfortable over there, you know, that might be a pretty dynamic pairing from that perspective. What do you think of that deal from
and
LA?
After that, yeah, and I mean, if that does work out, well, then they don't need to go look for another right side guy. They can then turn around and put their focus on bringing in what they call, you know, we hear a lot of talk lately, you know, about that the Leafs need a heavy forward, i.e. a power forward. I love this new phrase now, they're heavy forwards, or they play heavy hockey. In other words, you want a physical guy who's a good net presence and can kind of play smash mouth when you need him to. In which case, you know, maybe somebody they go after, maybe somebody like Wayne Simmonds or Michael Ferland. We'll see. But it'll be interesting to see. I don't think the Leafs are done, but that was a good move on their part, you know, to at least do something to address their defense.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the deal yesterday, I mean, you know, well, Jim Rutherford's been the busiest GM in the league this year in the trade market. You know, he's kind of showing, you know, folks that, you know what, yeah, you can have a salary cap and limited cap space, but you can still make, like, player-for-player hockey trades, you know, in season. He's done it several times already. And, that deal with the Panthers works so well for both sides. I think both sides get what they want. Penguins wanted to bring in, they want to get a little younger, guys who could be a little more, you know, a little more size, you know, as well as guys who are signed beyond this season. The Panthers, meanwhile, they get two guys on expiring contracts. If they don't work out, they can either flip them at the trade deadline or just let them walk by a free agency. But they're clearing cap space to be big-time buyers this summer, either via trades or, more likely, via free agency. And, of course, the talk is that, they're looking at Sergei Bobrovsky and Artemi Panarin in Columbus. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how that pans out, whether they get those guys or not. But they're definitely going to be players this summer.
Well, that's interesting. We were talking earlier in the show. Now, if they turn around and deal Brassard and Sheehan, they could get, you know, they got the 2/4 from Pittsburgh, and they could really end up with a lot of picks in this year's draft and a lot of cap space to where if let's say Panarin goes and Bobrovsky doesn't, or vice versa. Florida looks to be a pretty big player here in the offseason, like you said, if they can get the assets out of those two other players as well. Florida's setting up, and I think it's about time. I think they've run their course with what they have. I think they're a very talented team. Me and Chris have talked about Florida quite a bit, and I think there's just an it factor with that roster that's missing. And if they're going to shake it up, I think it's time for that to happen in Florida, and bringing in a Bobrovsky that could be Luongo's replacement, and bringing in Panarin for just one more piece of dynamic offensory, if you will. Let me create a word there. Florida could be pretty interesting to watch, not just at the deadline, but in the off season as well.
Well, yeah, because there's some impatience there now. And understandably, because they came so close last season, and they've got a lot of good young players. I mean, my gosh.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, Barkov, why this guy was not, you know, has barely gotten mentioned as a Selke nominee, it just boggles my mind. I mean, this, you know, if he was playing in a much more, and I don't want to say traditional hockey market, because I think that's becoming a ridiculous statement. But in it, let's say
a larger
like
metropolitan
or New York
area,
you know, or Edmonton. I mean, good God! I mean, you know, that's all we'd hear about would be Barkov, 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 because he's just fantastic.
That good,
they're just missing out down there. So you're right. Yeah, they've gone stayed the patient route for a while, built up with their younger players, but now, they're going to go out and they're going to get themselves the pieces they need to put themselves into the playoffs going forward.
And I agree. I think it's time, and I think they should. Well, let me bring in Chris and we'll get a look at maybe what's to come. Chris?
Hey, Lyle, it's great to talk to you as always. So let's start with the Kings. Obviously, they kind of show their hand where they're thinking they're headed. It seems like they got pretty good value. Time will tell, but it seems like to me that they got good value given the given. I'd be curious to your thought on that. And also, who's next? Who's going next in terms of the Kings?
Well, I can't disagree with your assessment about what they got from us. I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, they got a first-round pick and two good prospects. You know, one of them at least is going to be, you know, Gunstrom is going to be, I think, an NHL player starting next year. You know, so I don't think that they could have gotten any much better than what they did from the Leafs in that deal. You know, looking at who could be next. Well, I think it's pretty obvious right off the bat. Yeah, they're in sell mode here, but they're not going to be able to sell, you know, a lot of guys with heavy contracts. So we don't expect a guy like Dustin Brown to get moved. I'm not convinced they're going to trade Jonathan Quick. They could surprise us and do that. We've heard his name floated around quite a bit in the rumor mill, but I really don't think that he's going to be going anywhere for the time being. Jeff Carter's name's been floated around too, but you know that really needs his blessing. I know he lacks a no trade clause, so they could send him anywhere they wanted to. But you know the word kind of is that if he doesn't want to go or if he's not happy with where he could be sent, that he would just say, okay, I'm done, and just retire. So that's something that the Kings don't want, because then, you know, they'll be on the hook for part of his salary cap recapture penalty. So I don't think Carter's going to be going anywhere unless he blesses it. The two guys that kind of got mentioned, Alec Martinez and Tyler Toffoli, those guys have popped up as well. Having moved Muzzin, I don't know if they'll move Martinez. I'm not saying that they wouldn't if somebody came calling with a good offer. But now that they've moved out Muzzin, I don't think they want to deplete that blue line too much. So, you know, he could move, but I wouldn't be surprised if they hang on to him a little longer. And with Tyler Toffoli, I mean, on the one hand, I think he's probably now that Muzzin's gone, I think he's their best trade chip. But, you know, if you're looking at rebuilding with younger players, I still think he has a role there. You know what I mean? I mean, he's 26 years old. Yeah, his stats are down this season, but listen, stats are down for most of the Kings this year. He's still a very good two-way player. He can play center. He can also play on the wing. Again, that would be one where I think the offer would have to be really good for them, you know, to part with them. Let's say if they were to get offered, let's say a draft pick, a first-round pick that could potentially jump into the top 10, you know, along with maybe a top prospect. Maybe they might consider that move, but. Yeah, it's like I said, it's going to be interesting to see out of those three guys, but especially Martinez and Toffoli, if either of those guys go by the deadline.
And let's jump over to Columbus. We've talked, me and Mark have debated Columbus the last couple of months. Yeah. Mark feels like if you can't sign these people, they must Panarin and Bobrovsky, they must be traded. I said to him, you know what, I feel like Columbus the ownership, the front office, they're kind of damned if they do and they damned if they don't. And they're in an impossible situation. For me, especially Panarin, if they don't get a special offer, for them to even think about moving him, it has to be a special offer, which is tricky because he's a rental. How do you see this playing out in Columbus?
Well, I mean, I've been pretty adamant that, you know, as long as the Blue Jackets remain in playoff contention or still holding on to a playoff berth, that they wouldn't move either guy. And I know there's been a lot of speculation and a lot of talk that that they're considering their options now. That I mean, Bobrovsky's just still having a horrible year. and that, you know, Panarin, he's still reluctant to resign. I mean, he's been really kind of stringing them along, and I can understand the frustration that they're probably feeling right now. But by the same token, I mean, Bobrovsky, I mean, he still has more experience as a starter than Korpisalo has. They're backup that they've been playing a lot more now lately. But I still think they would, if they're going to make a run in the playoffs, that they're still going to want to have Bobrovsky there. And Panarin's their best forward. He's their leading scorer. He's their best player. And if you trade him, you're basically pretty much sabotaging your playoff hopes, unless you can get back something that's going to kind of offset his departure, though you're never going to get equal value, let's be honest. That's just not going to happen. They're going to take a close look, and I know that there's been talk that there's been calls about Panarin. I haven't heard very much about Bobrovsky, just again because he's got his no movement clause. Nobody knows for sure if he's offered up a list of destinations or not, if he's put it to paper or if he's just verbally said it. So we'll just kind of shunt him to the side. I think that, you know, the situation with Panarin is the one that bears more scrutiny here. And, yeah, teams are calling. But the Jackets aren't going to just give Panarin away or just trade him just because, well, we're going to lose him for nothing anyway. We might as well get something back. Well, no. If you're not going to get at least a promising young player who can give you some help now and down the road, what's the point? Why trade one of the best offensive players in the league for, well, we'll give you a first and a second and a prospect? Well, no. Sorry, what, no. Better off keeping him as an own rental and push on for the playoffs. Now, that being said, they've been struggling a little bit in the last week and a half. And, of course, we saw vintage Tortorella earlier in the week. He hasn't been very pleased with their performance. If they should – torts is only torts can torts.
Love it.
Yeah. But,
thing on Panarin. If someone comes along, and it's kind of the same as the Evander Kane situation last year, where he's one of the deeper offensive players in the league, and – if that kind of a package that the Sharks gave up to bring in Evander Kane, hopeful that they would be able to re-sign him, and fortunately for them, they did. If that kind of a deal goes to Kekalainen, I think he has to take it. Those are two players. They're too valuable of an asset to hang onto the roster and lose for nothing. If you're in a fringe wild card position, I don't believe in Columbus to the point of making a deep run with those two players. But if you can get, you know, first-round picks, good A-plus prospects, maybe a roster player from one of the two, and set yourself up for the next 2 years to grow into that team that can take on the Washingtons and the Pittsburghs and the Torontos and the Tampa Bays, I don't think Columbus is in that level. I think that you can sell that kind of a trade to your fans and say, we're going to be at that level in the next 2 years with what we've done here. And to go in as a wild card, you know what I'm saying? To go in as a wild card and let's say you end up playing Toronto or Tampa in the first round and you're out in five. I mean, last year was their best chance. They're up 2-0 to Washington and going home. And we saw what happened. They lose four straight. So there's something that, I mean, Islanders fans know real well. And you know, I understand wanting to make a run if you have a core that can do it. But to hang on to those assets, they could really set you up in the next 2 to 5 years to be a top-flight team in the Eastern Conference. I think you got to make those kind of moves. If an Evander Kane or a Ryan O'Reilly-type deal comes forward, they got to pull the trigger.
It's gonna depend on where they are in the standings. If they turn around here in the next, you know, over the next 2 weeks, and they, you know, turn around and win five games or something like that in a row, well, then, you know, and they shoot up toward the metropolitan standings, well, then I think that changes the situation big time. I think then you turn around and you go, they're going to go, okay, we still think we have a shot. And I believe it was, I think it was Pierre LeBrun at TSN made this point too earlier in the week. He said, remember last year they were kind of in the same situation. They were in the same situation with Jack Johnson. And they were fielding offers, trade offers for him, and they wanted a first-round pick, didn't get that offer, so they hung on to him. and they lost him for nothing to free agency, but they held on to him because they figured they could use him in the playoffs. So I now, obviously, Panarin and, you know, Bobrovsky are better players and could fetch better value. But again, it's going to depend on where are they in the standings and do they think they can make a run this year? Do they think they're good enough? Because as you said, if they don't think they are, then fine. You know, get the best offer you can for these guys. As you said, the fans aren't dumb. You can sell that to them, you know. The only thing I would say, you know, and you can turn around and say hindsight is 20/20, but, you know, if I think this is a bitter lesson here too. If you're going to trade for a premier scorer, make sure he's got more than 2 years on his contract.
I'm with you on that.
Matt
Duchene.
Boy.
Is that a nice segue here into Ottawa Senators? So the what they gave up in the Matt Duchene deal is going to bite them in the ass. And I said at the time that if they don't re-sign him, this is going to kill that organization for 5 years. And now they got Stone up at the same time, and also Dzingel. And Seathier are getting ready to, you know, come on expiring contracts. My guess is they're going to get the best they can for Duchene. They're going to do their darndest to re-sign Stone, and then maybe the other two move them. What's your take on Ottawa? They're kind of in a bind.
We find ourselves in an agreement. You know, I've been saying, you know, for quite a while that, Stone wants to stay in Ottawa. He's made that very clear. He has, you know, right from the day he signed that 1 year contract last summer, when Senators fans started freaking out, like, he was very quick to sit down and say, whoa, everybody, you know, hey, you know, this is just for now. You know, I still want to stay. We have time. We'll start talking about this again, but I don't want to go anywhere. I want to stay. And they really want to keep him. So, you know, I think the odds are good for Mark Stone to stay in Ottawa, less so for Duchene, because Duchene, I know he's been very diplomatic about it all. He hasn't tipped his hand really one way or another, but by not really, you know, you compare his comments to what Stone has been saying, and I think it's very clear. You know, who really wants to stay and who's going, well, if you pay me enough, I will, you know. So, you know, I'm not saying Stone's going to take a discount here. He's going to get paid, and I think they will pay to keep him. But Duchene, the word is, for rumors out of Ottawa, is that if Eugene Melnyk won't come up over $8 million a season, Duchene isn't staying in Ottawa. And out of those two main guys, I think Stone stays, and I think Duchene will be shopped starting by February 15th, because they're going to need to know by the middle of this month what these guys are going to do. So I think by February 15th, I wouldn't be surprised if we see or we hear that Stone's going to be close to being re-signed and Duchene's on the block. If they keep those two, then I think Dzingel is gone for sure. If one of them or both of those guys go, then they're definitely re-signing Dzingel. And as far as Cody Ceci goes, I would have disagreed about the possibility of them trading him. Yeah, I know that his contract situation was a bit contentious last year. But I really didn't think they had the depth to risk parting with him. But, you know, that was before, you know, you saw these good young defensemen that's come up, you know. And I'm speaking, of course, predominantly about, Chabot, who's been sidelined. But, I mean, still, good Lord, just 39 points in 43 games. You know, I mean he's not going to make you completely forget about Erik Karlsson, the one that got away, but – boy, oh boy, that's a nice bit of salve to that wound,
yes,
you know.
Sir.
Yeah, and I mean, you've also got Maxime Lajoie, you know, 21 years old. He's shown some good potential as well. So in that regard, with those two and the potential they have, and they're both young, and that's the thing. They've got so much upside that you can afford to part with Cody Ceci if that's what you want to do, You know, you can afford to trade him if you get a good deal. Again, I don't see them just throwing him away for nothing. And remember, they're not in any hurry. They're not under the same amount of pressure to move him as they are Dzingel and Stone and Duchesne, because he's a restricted free agent. So they can turn around and, you know, they can say, well,
sure,
you know, we didn't
have more options
we wanted
there
this time, so we'll hang on to it this summer, and maybe that's a move you do in the off season.
And how good does Joe Sakic look with that Matt Duchesne deal? Everything that he got before, and now the leader in the clubhouse for Jack Hughes. Come on. You know, I remember Sakic took a lot of deal. I mean, he waited like, I want to say 16 months from the time it became kind of public that Duchesne wanted
pretty
to get
much
moved to actually pulling the trigger on a deal. But he stuck to his guns, and boy, that's the cat that caught the canary there with Joe Sakic.
He sure did. I mean, yeah, listen, I was among his critics too at the time, but this
sure
just gets better and better for him. So, yeah, well played, Joe Sakic.
Chris?
Hey, Lyle. So, okay, two things, and then I'll give you back to Mark, and he can finish up. The Vegas Golden Knights, they were a very aggressive last trade deadline. They brought in Tatar for both the immediate and the long term. We know how that turned out. And they also brought in Ryan Reeves. Where do you see George McPhee in terms of this trade deadline landscape? Is he going to be active once again like that? Is he going to be, because he's traded away a lot of futures over the last 12 months, a little bit more reluctant? Where do you see the Knights, and who in particular do you think they're, or what type of player do you think they're targeting?
Yeah, it's interesting. Haven't heard very much about the Golden Knights in the trade market. You know, not like we did last year where it seemed like they were interested in everybody. you know, but I wouldn't rule it out. I think that, George McPhee is going to keep an eye on the market. I really do think he would probably be looking perhaps more at maybe like bringing in a third line, somebody to kind of bolster that third line a bit, I'm thinking. You know, perhaps he keeps an eye out as well for a defenseman. But I you know, he could surprise us and go after one of the bigger names that's in the rumor mill right now. Maybe he goes after a guy like Wayne Simmonds. Maybe he tries to grab somebody like Stone if he becomes available. Maybe he goes after somebody like Ferland. Who can say? You know, but just because we haven't heard anything or very much about him doesn't mean that he's not going to be shopping. I think he's going to keep an eye on the market. And if he gets an opportunity to bring in somebody that can help the club, obviously he's going to do it. As you said, he dealt away a lot of futures last year. So I don't think he's going to want to, you know, trade away as many this time around. But you know, if he can find somebody that's a bit, you know, that's affordable to bring in there, I think he'll look at doing that.
And then last week, Lyle, we had the one and only Russ Cohen of Sportsology.com on, who knows the Flyers inside and out, and he was very much so saying that he fully expects Wayne Simmonds to be traded, that it doesn't seem like a deal for the two sides is in hand. What teams do you think are really going to up the ante to get Wayne Simmonds? Because he is probably one, in terms of that, you know, big forward, as you mentioned before, who can also score, he's probably like the only guy on that's going to be available between now and the trade deadline that falls into that category. What teams do you think are going to be willing to pay up to bring Wayne Simmonds in, even as a rental?
Well, I think the Boston Bruins, right off the bat, I think they're going to be very interested in getting him. The Boston punditry have been stumping for Wayne Simmonds since the season began. So he plays that type of hockey, you know, that Bruins fans love, obviously.
Yep.
But something that their team's been kind of lacking a bit. That power forward who can be a physical net presence, can drop the gloves when you need him to. He can do that hard physical work along the boards, in front of the net. So I can see the Bruins going after him. I mentioned earlier that there have been some folks in Toronto have preferred to see the Leafs go after him. You can't rule out that possibility. TSN's Pierre LeBrun, he's been suggesting, hey, he might be a good fit with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, he's as he says, he's got nothing to go on that indicates the Lightning are going to go after him. But he thinks he'd be a good fit there. And, you know, I wouldn't rule out the Calgary Flames. There's been talk that they might try to bring back Michael Ferland from Carolina. But, you know, if the price is right, maybe they might take a look at, you know, at Wayne Simmonds instead, because he's a leader. You know, he's got plenty of experience, and yeah, he could provide an even more physical edge. I mean, can you imagine him and and Matt Tkachuk out there just banging and crashing? I mean, that would just they would become a real pain in the ass to play against.
Yeah.
So
I'm in the Western Conference. I don't want to see that too much. Well, all right. Out of lastly, before we let you go, what hot rumors of some teams that maybe we haven't talked about yet? Are you looking at being big buyers or sellers here in the next couple weeks?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously all eyes are still on the St. Louis Blues. Are they going to be buyers? Are they going to be sellers? I would keep an eye on them. You know, we've heard like guys like, oh, they could trade Tarasenko or Pietrangelo or Parayko. They're not moving those guys at the trade deadline. Look at more like guys like Jay Bouwmeester, Perron could move.
Shen.
Braden Shen. I think that I wouldn't rule that out. He's got another year left on his contract, and he has surfaced from time to time as a possible candidate. I mentioned Carolina. I still think, I mean, they made a good move a couple of weeks ago bringing in Nino Niederreiter. I think that he's been a significant addition, but they're not done. Ferland, we mentioned, he's an unrestricted free agent. They're not going to let him walk for nothing. They could turn around and move him maybe for like a first round pick if they can get him, and then turn around and maybe trade one of their right shot defensemen guys I mentioned, like Dougie Hamilton, Justin Falker, Brett Pesce. Maybe move one of those guys for a scoring forward as well. So keep an eye on the Hurricanes. They're not done. And listen, I think that we should also keep an eye on the New York Islanders as well. Lou Lamoriello never tips his hand. But if you look at his trade history, if he thinks his team has the horses to make a deep run in the playoffs, he goes for it. So I would not rule out the possibility that he gets involved and maybe goes after one of these guys that we talked about here in the last half hour.
Yeah, we had Andrew Gross from New York Newsday on earlier, and he said the same thing, that if you look at Lamoriello's history around trade deadlines, if his team is in the upper tier of the leagues, he's a very aggressive general manager doing what it takes to put his team in position to get a run. So, that's a good point by you. The Islanders might be one of the busier teams by the time this is all said and done.
And also keep an eye on the San Jose Sharks. Doug Wilson does the same thing. We know he makes a big move at the trade deadline. He did last year for Evander Kane, and I could see him jumping in here and getting and going after one of these guys we talked about too.
Yeah, I agree 100%. He's always busy. Chris, have you got anything else for Lyle?
No, that's it. I just want, I guess, one last point going back to Panarin. It would seem to me, unless the Jackets go on a big run these next 2-3 weeks, a big winning streak, but if at the end of the day, I find it hard to believe that a team like, let's say, a Nashville, who feels like they can win the whole thing, that they offer a top prospect like Dante Fabro in their first. Or you mentioned the Islanders, who feel like, let's get Panarin in here, let's get him with Barzal, and we'll start the campaign and in terms of signing him long term. I think we can get it done. They're willing to give up a first round pick, a bold review, and let's say a good prospect. It's going to be very hard for Columbus to say no to, and knowing that they're going to lose them at the end of the year. I mean, I got to think that one of those kind of offers is going to be on the table for them. Don't you
agree?
I cannot disagree with you on that. Absolutely. I mean, listen, we know that Nashville is going to be going for it again this year. I would also, I don't think you'd see them getting, I was going to say, I'm going to mention the Winnipeg Jets, throw them in there, but not for Panarin. They'd be going after a center, maybe somebody like Kevin Hayes or somebody like that, or maybe Matt
Brian Boyle.
Maybe. I think he'd be a good more fit. Of a second line guy than anything else, but I'm not saying Boyle isn't good enough. But back to the point, though, about Panarin, you know, I could certainly see the Predators, you know, because making a pitch for him, because as you said, they still have the depth in prospects and young players that they could offer up. And like you said, I mean, the Islanders, I mean, say what you will about Gar Snow, but he left the shelves well stocked for Lou Lamoriello to make some moves if he wants to. So yeah, it could be very interesting to see what happens. And let's face it, if the Islanders go after and get Panarin, oh my God, that changed. That's all of a sudden hockey just got really, really exciting, you know, for people
yeah.
who, you know, have not paid much attention to the Islanders this year, because they pull that off. Now you know, okay, yeah, there definitely is a new sheriff in town here.
Yeah,
I also would throw in last point, guys. The Sharks would be, I'm sure Doug Wilson would love nothing better than bringing Panarin, even if it's for a rental to go all in. I just don't think he has the inventory, right? Because he traded away the
yeah.
first round pick. The farm system, the farm system's thin. I mean, he would have to get beyond creative, and I don't know how that's even possible. I would be very impressed if he could pull that off, but he would, you know, I just don't, like I said, I don't think they have the greatest prospect pipeline. That they've traded away a couple of their high picks over the next couple of years with the Carlson trade and the Kane trade, I believe, if memory serves correct. So I don't know. I don't know how that would be a magic act, but you know, he would be very willing participant to at least to have the chance to pull it off.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Well, and like I said too. I mean, I don't see him going after Panarin though. I think he'd be looking at you know, somewhere else in his lineup to address that issue. Also, earlier when I was talking about the Blues, I mentioned David Perron. I don't know why I meant you know, Pat Maroon. You know,
okay.
Other guy. Yeah, I don't want to confuse people going, what? Perron's not here anywhere. No, it's like, no. They won't move David Perron. He's playing too well for them. Somebody would be more like Pat Maroon, who's an unrestricted free agent. So, anyway, just wanted to get that in.
All right, Lyle. Thank you so much for giving us your time again. You're very, very generous with your time today. We always appreciate talking to you, and we will talk to you down the road again, sir.
Looking forward to it, guys. Have a great day. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Thanks,
that's Lyle Richardson from Spectres Hockey. Go to spectreshockey.net for all the NHL trade rumors and rumor mill happenings, and follow him on Twitter at Spectres Hockey. Lots to digest there, Chris. What do you think?
It's going to be, you know, most trade deadlines in years past have been maybe there's a guy or two that's like, you know, a very good player, not an exceptional player, and then a bunch of complimentary players. This is a very different trade deadline, and
it feels like
there's going to be a lot of buyers, and there's a good amount of sellers. We didn't even get into the Royal Rangers who are going to sell Zuccarello and Kevin Hayes, and you mentioned Brian Boyle. There's a few other players as well. So I think it's going to be, you know, a very active one, and it will be interesting to see. Like also too, what is. I was just thinking when you were talking with Lyle about, you know, maybe Wayne Simmons. Wayne Simmons winds up in Calgary and San Jose maybe doesn't get Panarin, but gets a good another scoring forward to add to their lineup. Now you're George McPhee, and you're like, well, I got to do something now. Do I have to do something now, or don't I? Does that put – obviously, they'll put more pressure on him to do something. So those kind of dominoes as well. So it's going to be pretty fascinating stuff. And, in years past, we haven't seen the dominoes really start falling until, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 days out. And obviously this year is already very different with the Muzzin trade and then to a lesser extent, the Pittsburgh-Florida trade the last couple of days. But this is going to be an aggressive deadline.
To your point, exactly. You know, Muzzin might be – before it's said and done, one of the biggest names to move at the deadline, at least one of the biggest defensemen to move for sure. And we're almost a month out, and Toronto knew there was a market for him, and they jumped right in and made it happen right away. That's to your point, sir, that it already feels like a different trade deadline where teams are. And yeah, with Pittsburgh seeing their need to get depth and a little bit bigger on center, they pull off a pretty big deal to strengthen themselves down the middle. So teams are going to be identifying their targets and making a place for them. I think from now all the way up until the trade deadline, it's going to be an interesting month of February.
That's for sure.
Well, all right, buddy. One last thing. I want to hit an OT rant here. Did you watch any of the All-Star game?
Not really. No, I did not. I was under
the weather. They
started
off with the glow puck again. And
I heard about this
player technology tracking where they pop the names up above the player digitally on the ice like a video game. Stop. Okay? Just no. Maybe if you want to do that for the All-Star game so fans that are just tuning in casually can kind of get a visual of which superstars are out on the ice. If you do it during a regular broadcast, it's not a video game. It's just distracting. The vapor trail behind the puck, don't do that either. Nobody needs that watches hockey. Just stop with trying to gimmick the game up. It's fine without that. Please, I don't want to be watching a video game while I'm trying to watch a live sporting event. No other sport comes up with goofy stuff like that. Please don't do it in the NHL.
Well, I agree with that. So,
I mean, you don't see him putting the name of the kicker on over his head as he trots out onto the field in football, and you don't put some tracer vapor trail behind a baseball as it's leaving the yard on a home run. Just stop. It's not a video game. It's a real life sport event, and it does need to be treated like a cartoon.
Well said.
Okay, end of rant off the soapbox. I just had to get that off my chest. That's been bothering me all week, buddy.
Yeah, but we live in a world now where esports is a big thing and getting new fans and, you know, the whole nine yards. But I'm with you on that. If they wanted to do silly stuff like that, try a few things out at an all-star game, I'm fine with it. As long as that's where it ends.
If they want to do it like on Hulu with this, they have the NHL package streaming, anything online where someone's watching the game online and they want to play games with the technology online, that's fine. But on a regular national broadcast, there's no place for that. Let's say, you know how NBC Sports does Wednesday night, rivalry night, whatever they call it, right? If you want to highlight a rivalry, and whenever those two guys pop on the ice and they're on the ice at the same time, you want to flash it up real quick. Okay, here's our rivalry, and just sort of highlight it for a second or two that the Knights rivalry matchup is they're on the ice together. Everybody pay attention. And if you do it for a second or two, so it's okay, fine. But in a normal broadcast, we don't need that. Okay, let's moving on, Chris. What do we got on tap next week, sir?
Still working on our guests. We're hoping to finalize. We should finalize that early next week. It's an old friend of the show, but I don't want to speak just in case something breaks the wrong way. If not, we'll figure something out. But we'll have another great show for everyone.
All right. Well, make sure you guys follow our two guests today. They both way in depth on what they're doing. Follow Andrew Gross from New York Newsday on Twitter @AGrossNewsday. And we've had a lot of gross news days lately. So sorry, I had to get that pun in. I apologize to everybody. I was trying to be punny. And then Lyle Richardson, of course, on Twitter @SpectrusHockey, and go to SpectrusHockey.net for all of the latest rumor mill, what have yous. So for this week, that's going to wrap us up. We'll talk to everybody next week. Same time, same channel. For Chris on Mark, we're gone. We'll be right back.